Welcome to the Everything EV podcast from EV Powered. I'm Matt Allen, and today I'm joined by hypermiling expert Kevin Booker, holder of 4 Guinness World Records for EV driving. So, Kevin, thanks very much for joining me. We'll get onto those world records in a moment or two, but could you maybe start off just by telling us a bit about yourself, a bit about your professional background?
So basically, my background is actually IT and fleet management. So a little bit of fleet, but actually my main background is IT. But what I've found is actually the cars have come into my world of IT since they now all have plugs. So it used to be IT deals with anything if it's got a plug on it, and now the cars happen to have plugs on them.
So obviously, starting in IT, you're not what we would call a professional driver then. You're not somebody who spends an entire life at the wheel. So how on earth do you get from an IT fleet management position to attempting for Guinness World Records?
So basically, it started when I actually started a job, which was a significant distance driving. So I used to drive 70-mile round trip, and that can be quite boring. So I started to gamify the journey. So almost trying to see, even in fuel cars, if I could get in similar time to get to work, but actually using less fuel. So I kind of honed the techniques, and it was rural kind of country roads. So there were lots of opportunities to optimize your driving style. So then moving on to that, I saw a magazine called Fleet World advertised for an MPG marathon. So I thought I'd enter that, and that's where it all began, basically.
Okay, so it wasn't specifically EVs that you were aiming to hypermile. It was actually just regular race cars.
No, kind of, I've been kind of doing the hypermile thing probably since 2003 when I started a job which was a significant distance away. And I found over the years, as cars got more modern, I got more powerful cars, but still used the same amount of fuel because of optimizing my driving styles and the fact cars got more efficient.
So then how did you get from a magazine's MPG marathon challenge? I mean, how did you get on in that challenge in the first place?
So first year, I was in sort of the higher levels of it. I mean, that's where I met the people who co-drove on the record with me. So there's a BBC journalist, a guy called Paul Clifton, who'd done it for years, and Fergal McGrath, who was a Honda R&D engineer. And my first year, I actually did that in a Honda Civic. And that was when the Honda Civics could do, there was the year of the 1.6 Earth Dreams engine, which could do ludicrous MPG figures. It wasn't unheard of to get 100 MPG out of that diesel engine. It was almost, you could say probably it was peak diesel efficiency around about 2016, Mark, where they were doing ludicrous ranges and really efficient.
Okay, so how do you progress from there to... Did you approach Guinness with the idea for the world records? Was this something that you were approached by somebody else?
So basically, we had the idea, me, Paul Clifton and Fergal, we were always competing against each other on MPG marathons, and thought, actually, Fergal actually has the diesel and petrol car Guinness records. And I was chatting to him and said, why don't we do an electric team up and do an electric vehicle record? And then we came across the idea, well, let's do the John O'Groats to Land's End in an EV and see what we could get. And that was where the Ford Mustang Mach-E record, because actually with Guinness World Records, there's quite a lot of sponsorship needed because the support you need and the witnesses, they're not particularly cheap to do because you need all that supporting evidence around it and your vehicle trackers and vehicle loggers to log all that data.
So it's not a sort of straightforward thing of just sending off, saying, I'd like to do this, jumping in a car and off you go in that case. Could you actually, on the subject, can you just explain exactly what the records you hold are? So it means you have 4. So what are those records for?
The records are the most efficient from John O'Groats to Land's End in the Mustang Mach-E, which is about 6.5 miles per kilowatt hour. They do it in the massive watts per 100 kilometers, but it works out about 6.5 miles per kilowatt hour. Doing it in one charge stop, and that one charge stop was 43 minutes and 17 seconds. So that's all the car ones. And also the latest one is the van one, where me and Fergal teamed up with Sam Clark from GridServe to do the longest distance to a single charge in a van, which is 311 miles, which is, we took from the Americans who did it in a BrightDrop van, the difference being the Americans' vehicle had a 257 kilowatt hour battery, and ours had a 68 kilowatt hour usable battery.
What van was that in?
So that was in a Fiat e-Scudo, but we could have done it in any of the Stellantis vans. They're all the same van, effectively.
As you mentioned, these records are a major undertaking. There's a lot of things that go into, a lot of elements that go into it. Can you just talk to us a little bit about the process, the preparations, and the experience of setting out and attempting these records?
So a lot of the time goes into the preparation. You don't just get in the car and check. You've got to check things like, because it's all about the kind of tiny returns you get on stuff. It's almost like if you were doing a racing cycling team where there's lots of little things that you need to have test to the extreme. The fact that anyone can go in and get quite good efficiency figures. But when you're doing a record, you check the alignment of the wheels is all done to not just to them. It's spot on to the mat, not just right. Like you go to a local tire dealer and get the vehicle aligned. This is done on manufacturer's kind of alignment, because nothing's left to chance. Even the tires, you make sure you've got the A-rated tires, and you don't just put a brand new set on them. You've got to then bed them into the car, because the new ones will not be as even because you haven't worn them in. So you have to put a few thousand miles on the car to like get those bed in. And then just things like the car has to be that you or I could. So Guinness don't let you do a record with a vehicle that you've modified. So it has to be a vehicle that you or I could go out to a dealership and buy. The only things you're allowed to change are things which a customer could do. So you can put A-rated tires on it. You can get the wheel alignment and things like that. And you can, you know, things like, no cars have a spare wheel, so you don't have to even take the spare wheel out anymore. But for the record, for the Mustang, we did have some spare wheels, because obviously you don't want to have a puncture on the way. So, I mean, that was with the AA. So initially we did get given 4 spare wheels for that. But even the AA couldn't carry a full set of alloy wheels for the car. So we did just take the one, thinking the probability of having a puncture on all 4 wheels is unlikely. So it's just things like that. And it's just all those little tiny things like optimizing and making sure as well that it's got a good state of health on the battery. So you wouldn't want, there are variations between all cars, and just making sure you've got the best example of them, because it's all just those tiny gains that you need to make sure you've got.
And so was there a reason you chose the Mustang Mach-E, or was this just something that in your search for somebody to partner with you that Ford were willing to
Well, Ford were really, as sponsors, Ford were really good and really helpful. But the Mustang Mach-E, in the testing, we didn't think it was, because the only previous Ford we'd seen was the Focus BEV, which was not a great EV because it had no rapid charging. So we did some testing. The Ford genuinely surprised us. It is genuinely an efficient car. If you drive a Mach-E gently, not trying to hypermile, with the extended range, 400 is not unachievable on it. And so, I mean, we got over 500, but it's genuinely a good, efficient car. When you think of what they came from, the Ford Focus, which was a really quite primitive EV in comparison to modern ones, to the Mach-E. And when you think it's an SUV shape as well, you know, because the crown probably goes for efficiency in general, is probably Hyundai's and Kia's are some of the most efficient EVs out there. But the Mustang's up with them. And the other bonus is when we had it, it had an 89 kilowatt hour usable battery. They've actually slightly tweaked the safety margins on it now. So it's now 92 kilowatt hours usable. So possibly the only thing that could beat our record is the Mustang Mach-E with the slightly revised battery settings.
Is that something that might interest you to go and give it another shot now with the slightly revised one? Or do you think you've got
the
those
problem
records?
Is it's like, why would you go after your own records again? Is the thing, and it's a, you know, with the cost involved, I don't think Ford would want to break their own record with the car they've already broken it in. So it's kind of those things. If someone goes at some point a car will beat that record on the efficiency one, because you've got solid state batteries coming and things like that. You've got, is it IM launching next year? which is MG's premium brand with the first solid state battery. I mean, that should be able to beat it. So there will be cars that beat it. I'd rather beat it by a significant margin. You know, the ultimate one for us, which we like to do, is doing John O'Groats to Land's End in one charge. So basically charging fully at the top and doing it all the way without stopping. Obviously stopping for the health and safety reasons, but not to charge.
And do you think that's something that is going to be possible in the next few years then? Do you think the technology is moving at a pace that will allow that?
With the jump to solid state batteries, I think that will be the point where they do that. The only thing that depends on is actually whether manufacturers either use that to reduce the size of the battery, you know, so you've got similar range. Because you know, do they need to make a 1,000-mile EV battery? Because you're carting a lot of battery around for not much reason. Because solid state will be able to charge its speeds in excess of 200 kilowatts. So actually, do you need to cart that around? So, but that's the only technology that it's going to be. And it's likely to be less attainable for people because it's going to be in the really high-end cars, you know, 100,000 plus EQ, you know, the big long-range Tourers. And then is it a relevant record if you're doing it? You know, someone could say to you, yeah, but you're doing it in a 120,000-pound car, whereas actually the Mustang is a reasonably affordable EV. It's, you know, middle price range. It's not the most expensive. It's not the cheapest.
It's interesting, yeah, that to see where battery technology is going to fall in terms of availability and affordability and how it's used for range or whether it's used for efficiency, as you say.
But the trend seems to be with manufacturers going for big things like the EV9 now. So are they just going to use the solid state battery to cancel out the fact that you've built a massive SUV?
Do you think that's something that maybe manufacturers should be focusing on? It's just use that new technology on a usable everyday range rather than worrying about these stratospheric sort of headline numbers.
Yeah, because actually one of the most efficient cars I've ever had was the second generation Ioniq. So the original, and that did lots. I mean, when you looked at it, because it was a tri-fuel platform, you know, hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and EV, you looked at it, basically it was designed to beat a Toyota Prius. And it did that, but you looked at it, it had an aluminium bonnet and things like that. And I think manufacturers maybe should go away and actually focus on more efficient cars. So doing more with less, because that would genuinely do 200 miles, but it would the issues with it, it didn't charge particularly fast. But it's still the most efficient car ever driven. The only one I've heard that might be more efficient than it is the Volkswagen e-Up. I've heard lots of people say that they were good 7 miles per kilowatt hour capable cars driven gently, but I've never driven one for long enough to test it. And when you think the Ioniq was a more family orientated size than an Up, but it's like manufacturers, I think, maybe shouldn't necessarily do the SUVs. I guess there's bigger margins on an SUV to sell it than there is on a kind of focus size car, but I just think they do need to start doing more with less, because not everyone wants a big SUV.
That's actually something hopefully we're going to see that in the next year or so, where there's a few more compact, more affordable electric cars, the ID2 and the Dacia Spring and the Renault 5 coming along, that hopefully will address that.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, if we go back just for a minute, just to the records, obviously you said that a huge amount of what you needed to do was, it was the preparation, it was the planning. But can you just tell us a bit about the actual experience of going out there and trying to drive from John O'Groats to Land's End in as few stops as possible, as efficiently as possible? Could just a bit about what that was like, and if you had any particularly sort of hairy moments, was there any times where you thought that you weren't going to achieve what you'd set out to do?
You try and eliminate in the testing phase as much as you can, because you've got a lot of sponsors and you've got responsibilities for people. So you think, well, actually, it's people have invested a lot of money and time in you actually doing that. So you try and counter for every sort of variable, as it were. But the problem is that you can't control the weather. And the worst thing for efficiency and range on an EV is lots of surface wear. And probably the hairiest moment on the Mustang one was actually driving over the hilly part of Bodmin near the end, where there was loads of surface water and you could see the car's estimated range dropping below what we had left to do. I mean, luckily with all the logging equipment, we kind of knew we were showing the real state of charge rather than the fudged one. So we had a screen on there which said how many usable kilowatt hours were left. So when it said naught, we knew the Mustang's got a reasonably big buffer of a couple of kilowatt hours. But I think there's probably in that press car, if there's still my nail marks in the seatbelt from that, because I think it was Fergal driving the last stage and we were like, oh, are we going to get there? Yeah, when we were 5 miles away, it said battery depleted, stop safely now. And we kept on going. So, and we also, when we got to the, we had some photos, we had to get them taken by the sign at Land's End. And we deliberately didn't key off the car because we didn't know what its state would be if it would turn back on again. So we actually left it on for the whole thing so we could make sure that we didn't get it stuck by the sign.
But obviously, yeah,
pretty hairy, those bits.
So you see, you don't want to switch off and then not be able to charge it where it was.
The AA they have their charging kind of on the van. But before then, they didn't, you know, we had to get to a charger. I mean, things have moved on the van record. They had an onboard charger on their van so they could rescue us. But even the van one, we did the record. We drove round and that was with Sam Clark from GridServe. So we did 311 miles and the vehicle hadn't run out. It said it was low, but to make sure we got the data for Guinness, we had to key off so that Webfleet, who was sponsored, it would send all the data up to their cloud service and actually log the record because we could do that. So they told us but Sam said, oh, we've still got range left. So we actually went out and did another 3 miles.
Actually, on the subject of charges, obviously with the Mustang, you only had to stop once using the public network. But in your time setting records, driving EVs and stuff, have you seen the charging network develop? Do you think the charging network is getting to a point where we need it to be?
Well, actually, from a personal point of view, we've been EV drivers, my wife and I, since 2015. So the first EV we got was a 22 kilowatt hour Renault Zoe. And my wife's family's in Leicester. And we used to drive the trip from Swansea to Leicester in the Zoe because that was at the time when all the rapid charging network was free. So it was a really cheap way for her to get home. I mean, if we look back at it now, we probably spent significantly more than we would have spent on fuel on motorway services and like on expensive food in motorway services. But actually, it was more the challenge of it. And that was when the infrastructure was literally, if your one charger didn't work, you had to push it to the limits to get between chargers. So there was no plan B. But now when people say it's difficult to go in an EV, I mean, it's not, I find it easy now because my wife's got Hyundai Kona, I've got an Ioniq 5 and 200 plus miles range. It's like, well, you're never that far away from a rapid charger. So, I mean, even when I've done the EV rallies with Greenfleet, we've just winged it. Whereas loads of people have meticulously planned. We've just like, well, there's a charger here and here. We'll get to one of them. It'll be right.
Do you think that's just a familiarity thing? Obviously, you drive EVs all the time. You become comfortable in knowing that you can just get to the next place. You don't have to worry about planning your route so specifically.
Yeah, and I think as well, you learn where to go. So we'll now tend to go to charging hubs where there's more than one charger. So if we're going to stop, we'll stop at one where there's eight chargers, which didn't used to be a thing when we had the Renault Zoe. But it's just kind of, you just kind of get used to it. And I think it's almost like when you've got a specific model of car, you spot more of them about. It's like when you've got an EV, you kind of notice chargers that people don't. So you're like, oh, well, there's a rapid charger there. There's a rapid charger there. You see them. So people say there's no infrastructure. It's probably because they haven't driven an EV. So they've not tuned into looking for it and noticing it.
Yeah, actually, I was speaking to Kenneth Meekin from Motor just the other day, and he said that is part of the process of encouraging EV uptake is to make chargers visible. So those who are driving EVs know that they can get in there and find a charger. And those who don't see that there's infrastructure there, there's plenty of support there if they want to make that switch.
Yeah, exactly.
You mentioned there that you drive an Ioniq 5 yourself, and I follow you on social media. And every so often you'll post showing the efficiency you've achieved from that or from a test car. And I've driven a lot of the same cars you have. And every time you do this, I look at it and think, well, how has he got that kind of efficiency out of that car? I've got nowhere near that. Yeah. And obviously efficiency is a really important thing for a lot of EV drivers. Yeah. It limits the number of stops you have to make. It saves you money. So have you got any sort of simple driving tips that you could offer our listeners that can help them improve their efficiency?
The biggest thing I think that people do with EVs is, as you'll know, no EVs are particularly slow. And I think people drive them that way. That's why you get people saying there's more tire wear. It's like, because you've got, you know, like if I take my wife's Hyundai Kona, for example, that's 201 brake horsepower. That used to be, when I was looking back in 2006 at like a hot hatch, the Civic Type R was 197 brake horsepower and classed as a hot hatch. Now you've got just a normal crossover, which has that much power. And it's more about, you can still drive them gently. You don't have to drive them. And it's about reading the road ahead. And lots of people think high regen is the way to get more range. It's not necessarily, because actually virtually all EVs have two-stage braking. So if you're gentle enough, you can control the regen yourself. So you can actually do it by being gentle on the brakes and knowing the point where it switches to real brakes. So most of the time I, you know, just use the regen braking, but I found if I have a high kind of one pedal driving mode, you end up fighting the regen. So you tend to be more bursty on the throttle then, which actually makes you less efficient. Whereas if you could let it ease off gently, so you're at the right speed for a roundabout or sets of traffic lights, you kind of just filter in, and that's actually the biggest savings is you make is that. So that, because I was surprised, because I've driven like Subaru Solteras and stuff like that, and loads of people said to me, how did you get 4.2 miles per kilowatt hour? I mean, it wasn't particularly hard to do that. I mean, it's some of the country roads, by reading ahead and using the contours of the road, I had it up to 5 miles per kilowatt hour. It's just, you've just got to kind of drive the way you're supposed to drive, really, is not look a couple of meters in front of you. You should be looking down the road at what's coming up.
So actually, it's about that anticipation. So it's not necessarily that there are EV specific tips. It's the same skills that you would have used when you were hypermiling in your diesel Honda Civic.
Yeah, it's all about smoothness, really, and just not doing rapid changes in speed. So not rapid acceleration, not rapid deceleration, because all you're doing then is using your real brakes to wasting that free energy as heat. And then with the acceleration, it takes a lot more energy to move it quickly. And simple things like, you might, with the sort of aerodynamic curve of most vehicles, you might notice that actually you could drop 5 miles. So if you're doing on a motorway, if you're sitting at 65, you'll be far more efficient than 70, and just that 5 miles an hour difference, and you'll actually get to your destination quicker in many times because you'll save a charge stop. So it's playing, and actually you sit with the traffic, because rather than, you'll find lots of people darting in and out and racing around it, well, actually you're better going with the flow of the traffic on the road.
So yeah, they're not major changes to your driving style or anything you need to make these incremental gains that, as you say, maybe save your charging stop. I mean, you can charge at home where it's cheaper, this sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's just little things you can make a little difference with, and those all add up. You know, it might be on a long, and actually most of the charging people do is at home. So, I mean, there are the issues around people who can't charge at home. And, you know, I don't want to say EVs aren't perfect for everyone, because there is that discrepancy between public charging and home charging, which at some point will need to be addressed if we're all going to EVs. But, you know, generally, most people, if you've got a driveway, the vast majority of charging will be done at home for quite low prices.
Obviously, you're someone who's enthusiastic about EVs. You're passionate about them. So in general terms, what is there coming along that sort of you're excited about? Are there any models in particular that you've got your eye on that you think are going to be an important model in the next couple of years?
There's one that's just been launched, which will probably surprise you when I pick this, is I actually quite like the Ioniq 5N, because I think that'll do a lot to change the petrol head's perception of EVs, because it's, you know, EVs, we all know they're quick, but I think the Ioniq 5N, it having been in one and looked at one, it's got that kind of, it's got the theater of the engine noise, basically, because it does the noise, it does the downshifts. It's almost like an EV that's been built to appeal to a petrol head. And it's, I mean, it's a genuinely quick, if anything, it's probably too quick, because I don't know who actually for normal road use needs 630 brake horsepower. But it's things like that, because I mean, I've driven the MG4 X-Power as well, and that's, it's a quick car, but it's, you don't realize it's quick. It hasn't got the theater that the Ioniq 5N, they seem to have had engineers to engineer that sort of, that kind of almost old fashioned petrol head experience into an EV.
Do you think actually that'll help make EVs appeal? Because we know that they're clean. We know that they can be very efficient. We know they're quiet and they're smooth. But yeah, as you say, they've lacked that drama. So do you think this is something that actually could help
I think cars like that will, because there are people who want sporty cars, and that's kind of got the theater of the sporty car with it still. I mean, a bit big still, because it's an Ioniq 5. Now, I know from driving an Ioniq 5 that it doesn't fit in 1970s car parking spaces that well. But I think it's really kind of the only problem with it is there are some things which will hurt its efficiency. But I mean, there's things that actually, if you're buying that type of car, you're not going to be massively worried about the efficiency. You know, 22-inch wheels with really low profile sticky tires are probably not the best to get. You wouldn't go for a Guinness World Record by and pick 22-inch wheels. But when you think of it, if you compared to, that's a 600 brake horsepower car, you think of how thirsty a 600 brake horsepower fuel car would be. And you're talking probably, I reckon, driven gently, you'd get 3 miles per kilowatt hour out of that. So you're talking, that's the equivalent of over 100 MPGE, as it were. So actually, you can have both worlds. So you can have that fun, but you can drive it to the shops, and it'll drive gently and drive. I mean, that's the one thing I found when I've driven the MG4 X-Power. You can drive it gently and get 3.5-4 miles per kilowatt hour out of it, or you can do 0-60 in 3.8 seconds.
I'll tell you what, I look forward to the day when you get an Ioniq 5N on test and just to see exactly what efficiency figure you managed to get out of that.
Yeah, I mean, that one will, I think it'll be, I reckon 3.5 will probably be a good target on that.
Yeah, that's certainly something to look forward to in the next year or so. Listen, Kevin, thanks so much for your time. It's been great chatting to you. It'd be really interesting to hear all about the records and to take those tips on board. Hopefully our listeners will be able to take your advice on board and sort of emulate you at least a little bit, if not quite to the same extent. So really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us, Kevin. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please remember to subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. And to stay up to date with all the latest EV news, reviews, features and videos, visit evpowered.co.uk, follow us on social media, and subscribe to EV Powered on YouTube.